home where nothing's more important to me than the health and well-being of my freaks.
Yes, welcome, coaches, to episode 148 of the Talking Split podcast. It's been going for that long somehow. I am Rob Calder, the manager of Coach Education. Joined by the high performance coach for the country women, Zoe Carr. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And the new dad, Nick Mihai. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be back. And it's also really good and pleased to see that our podcast suspension has been lifted, Zoe. After our last effort.
Yes.
We'll see
how long this goes for.
Yeah, well, the last time they were on, Zoe and Coops went for like over 2 hours on a mailbag episode. So this is the least of our problems, I'd like to think. So as always, podcast is back. Drills will be back on a Monday night next week. I did actually forget to upload the one for this week, but there will be drills back on next week. Instagram, YouTube, X, they'll all go up there. You can now leave ratings and reviews on Spotify and, of course, on Apple Podcasts. You can find us there. Anything you're able to do to help share the podcast, that would be a massive help on our end. We spoke about new dad life, Nick. How is it going so far?
Yeah, you definitely got to lean into it.
You don't have many options.
Yeah.
I mean, some feedback that I can, being as an educator, want to give back. I don't think you lose sleep. I think it's just broken up. Having said that, I'm definitely the person that supports the person looking after my son. And just on that, if I can quickly, I won't go too much off topic, but I have in the theme of education, just prepared a little list of phrases you shouldn't use to your partner during labour. Now, this is very specific data. Obviously, there's only feedback from one person, and I think there's a variable in there, like timing's probably not great, but just some phrases at home that you shouldn't use. You know. First one, are you okay? Yeah, believe
unless,
it or not.
Unless it's September 13th, in which case... 13th?
Use it.
Is that Are You Okay Day? I think it's Are You Okay Day. Yeah, we'll go with 13th.
Yeah, but obviously timing is part of it. Should I get the midwife? Are you thirsty? My back is killing me on this floor. And finally, can I use the bed?
Well, sorry, before you move on. Yeah. As in your back is killing
me? Yeah, as in my back, because I had to sleep on the floor with a pillow and I was like, man, my back is killing me. And then the last one, can I use the bed when you're not using it? So just... Just some phrases to avoid, you know, part of a bit of a coach ed. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Some of those I feel like might have been self-explanatory. I am impressed with the lack of, you know, can I bring my Xbox? as this is all sort of playing out, but you've done well. But the sleep, as you sort of alluded to, is a little bit of an issue at the minute, which is kind of normal. Mm-hmm. It's is there anything you've kind of taken that you sort of sit there and it's like, I was not prepared for this?
I would say you learn 90% on the job.
Yep.
But what's actually amazing is just these things you can't describe. Like when you're first holding your son, you're instantly connected to them. And I think that you can't explain, like, why am I connected to you? I've known you for like 20 minutes.
And you've cried the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. But you're instantly connected to them and... used to be, you know, hard day work, you come home tired, you used to just want to lounge on the couch and all that sort of stuff. You just forget about all that tired stuff when you get home. So I think it's more learning life lessons when you know, experiences more than anything else. I think you don't really prepare for. There's a lot of good stuff and all the other stuff, like the nappy changes, what to look for, how to bath them, you're really learning on the job.
Yep.
You really are learning on the job. Well, Sarah is anyway.
Oh, this is not going to be a Father of the Year award, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's not. It's not painting a good life.
No, it's not. But, I mean, you talked on the education background. That's kind of what a lot of our coaches are doing. Like, they're learning on the job. Like, you might be coaching under duress. You may not have any basketball experience, but you've got to kind of figure it out as you go through it. So it's kind of nice that you've had that little bit of grounding, I suppose, as to what comes next. Haven't put them in, like, you know, full basketball gear or anything like that.
Like, Have chucked on some Jordans that were very generously given to me by Rob and Zoe.
Handballed on, I believe, is the term for it. Like it's.
Hey, Sarah had them on him in like 5 minutes, so they were really cool. We also got, obviously I used to work at Casey, and they gave me a little MBL1 jersey with Orlando on the back, and we put him in that top as well.
Excellent. Contract coming with it as well?
Well, I believe so. I'm still waiting for it. But,
You may be waiting a while.
Yeah.
Zoe, fairly busy January into February, which, you know, we'll talk about in a little bit, but January in general, give us the gist of how that all played out.
Yeah, so, well, for me personally, started off with a pre-Country Cup camp and then into Country Cup up in Albury, which was awesome, but very long days and incredibly hot. Was a bit more challenging this year because of having to use multiple venues. Normally we only use the two, but we had to use four, sometimes five, because of Lauren Jackson being renovated. So that was a bit of a challenge. But
stadium, that is, not Lauren Jackson. The person.
Not the person, sorry. So, yeah, that was a bit of a challenge, but everybody worked really well together and figured it out and understood, you know, it can't be changed. So get on with it, basically. And then straight into Southern Cross Challenge here at State Basketball Centre, which was, I think, a fairly large success and an even bigger success for us from a country perspective, because we were lucky enough to have our coach education crew with us for our coaches.
Crew as if there's like 15 of us.
Well, there's two. but doing some really valuable coach PD, because when we've got finally got coaches together in the room, it's we've got to be able to try and do that and use that time, because Zooms are good but they're not great. And I know I hate sitting in Zooms, particularly after about 10 minutes. So, you know, being able to have them together and talk to them and get their side of things as well, but also with the both of you sitting with them in games and giving them feedback was just massive. So, yeah, really, really cool time. And then a few days off, supposed to be AusCamp up in Canberra, but I suppose we'll get to that in a sec. And then into under 20 nationals. So, yeah, basically January just evaporates and part of February for us. We've got All-State camp coming up, not this weekend but the weekend after, and then it's pretty much regular scheduled programming after that. So,
and even then, I think Coops and Bestie are off to Japan.
They are, yeah. And obviously the Metro guys had ECC before our Country Cup. So, yeah, it's full on. When we talk about January being crazy, it's definitely not an exaggeration.
For the junior coaches as well, you can throw in the Dandy Eltham tournament in there too.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, there's a lot
Bendigo
happening.
Classics on. Yeah. Like, it's constant. It's when you look at, like, if you're at all those events, that's taxing, financially, time-wise, mentally draining, all of it. That's a lot. In particular, when you haven't been on for a little bit, it's, you know, you've had that sort of 4-ish weeks off, give or take. I know when I always used to come back, I'd lose my voice within about 3 games of coaching, getting back into it again, and even presenting stuff. Normally okay the first day, normally okay the second day, third day, gone. Like you start to get a little bit croaky and it's like, oh, is this sickness? And it's like, no, you just haven't done this for a while, and you get back into it again. But I mean, we talk about the coach ed side of things. Like, the coaches were phenomenal at Southern Cross, the ones that we worked with, like really engaging. Like, Nick, you gave a presentation as well on video review and scouting and how you do what you do with Phoenix as well, which I think was really well received by everyone. And they're long days. Like, it's, I mean, ultimately we had them up, like Dr. Julia Walsh gave a presentation here on the Saturday morning, and it was a 7 a.m. start before games started at 9 o'clock.
And they were with me the night before.
Yeah.
Till 9 o'clock at night or whatever it was.
Yep.
And absolutely, there is a part of that we're trying to simulate nationals, what it's like. You're up early, you're in bed late. We don't advocate for, you know, 2 a.m., 3 a.m. finishes and things like that. We want you to be efficient with what you're doing. And that's, again, why we want this education to try and, you know, when these coaches do eventually get to that level, if that's where they want to go, then, you know, they're at a level to not need to be up at those crazy hours. We don't see that as a badge of honour. We actually see that as an inefficiency of work. So But they are still very long days and they're very taxing mentally and all those sort of things. So that's sort of what we're trying to replicate with that as well in a shorter amount of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is difficult. I know we did a lot of miking up of coaches over the course of Southern Cross as well, and much to the fear and disgust of some of them that are like, I do not want to do this. This is going to be really confronting. It's like, yep, it is, but you got to hear it. You got to see your body language as a coach. And I think, all right, this might be a really flippant comment, but our coaches from an X's and O's perspective are actually quite good. Like they're a long way advanced from, say, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years. Like, they are miles further ahead than where they were. Their coaching has evolved. What I think the real hot button topic for them to get better at is how they communicate. What does their demeanor look like? Those sorts of things. And how does it now correlate to the X's and O's?
Well, and strategy too.
Yep.
When do I intervene? When do I let it go? How to develop that feel for the game of, you know, what's about to happen and what could work. You know, if we were to throw a trap of some sort on here, will it hurt us or help us? You know, all those sort of the little things with the strategy and that feel and that instinct that comes with coaching, which only comes with reps as well.
It's really the core level of the strategy side as well. Like, things that I noticed with coaches was their X's and O's were great, but showing the players on the whiteboard is where they needed to improve. So they're getting more knowledge, but we can't forget that basic stuff that's really important as well.
Yeah.
And how often do coaches actually get coached is a big part of it. Like, when they're in, we kind of need to do as much work with them as we possibly can. And, you know, it was a fun experience. Like, to their credit, every coach I spoke to and worked with was open to everything. Like, none of them pushed back and said, I disagree with this and you don't know what you're or anything like that. And they might have thought it, but they didn't say it, so I appreciate that. But they were all really good about it, which I think is fantastic. They've come in with a bit of a growth mindset because, you know, ultimately some of these coaches may not be too far away from getting a tap on the shoulder to jump on a state bench at some stage or have further opportunities with their coaching. But who is helping them when they're not in that environment? And that's kind of the difficult part. So when they are in town, we've got to do the most we can with them. So, yeah, it's a long day, but it's a good thing as well to have as much support as they did, because there were times where and can't discount the work that Hayden Kirkwood, Rebel Noda, Matt Holmes did as well as mentor coaches for the country ones in particular. Metro had a slightly different setup with what they had, with how they set up their teams in the first place, which is fine. But they would – like, there was one stage where I looked down a bench and there was, like, Matt and Rebel – Hayden was on the baseline. I think you were in one corner. I was potentially in the other corner filming some stuff as well. And it's like, if you're a coach and you look around and see that, it's like, well, I can't feel not supported as a part of this. So, and even as a parent, you look around and say, hey, everyone is watching this. This is a really good environment where my child is getting development, but I can see the coach is getting some development as well. So for mine, the more of that we can do, the better it's going to be. Because I think there is also a level where coaches hit and you're almost like, hey, you're competent now, great. I'm going to stop putting time and effort into you because now you're on your own, so to speak. I'm going to go and help the next coach that has limited understanding or experience as to what they're doing. And it's, you know, we talk about it a lot with the VJBL type system coaches. You get to a first team, you're probably not going to see your director of coaching a whole lot, like, because you are capable at that point where you're not going to cause problems. And if there are problems, you can probably fix them yourself. I'm going to go and spend time, and I hope they are spending time with the lower teams, with less experienced coaches that do need assistance in that world. So being able to do a little bit of work in that space is great. And hopefully it's something we can continue doing a lot moving forward.
Well, I think the more we do that, the better, because one of the things that my coaches in particular, they've gotten so much better at it. So I'm really happy with it. But I used to sit and watch their games, and they used to be, like, frightened that I was judging them. And the amount of times I had to say, hey, if I'm sitting at the end of your court and I'm talking, I'm probably talking about what I've just eaten or what I want to eat. Like, don't...
Can confirm.
Don't worry about that. And it's often burritos. But it's...
Good choice.
No complaints.
But it's, I guess... releasing that fear of that, oh, you know, they're watching, they're judging, we'll give you feedback, but it's to help. But I think also on the flip side of that, there are times where, from a giving of feedback perspective, needs some improvement as well, because that's what's caused this fear. People have approached coaches after a game and just starts tearing into them, or making comments that are, you know, a bit
unhelpful.
So of course that's going to be their thought, that that's what they expect, that that's what's coming, when really that's not how it should be. Every, particularly in those tournaments where they're development based, like, it should just be, I mean, I didn't care if we won or lost a single game in that tournament. I wanted the kids to get better and to play a certain way, and they did. And I wanted the coaches to coach a certain way, and enjoy themselves and get that real itch to try and go further with their coaching, and they did. So for me, that's a success. I'm not going to walk in there and start, you know, telling them off because they didn't call a timeout when I thought they should have. We talk about it as to why I think it was a time to make that call, but it's, yeah, I think it goes both ways a little bit. I think the coaches need to just, you know, understand why people are giving them that feedback, but sometimes people giving feedback need to understand that there's a human looking at you, and, you know, they need to hear what they need to hear, but it can be delivered in a certain way.
And if you're giving feedback to coaches, time and place is really important as well. 100%. In front of their players is not the appropriate time. So I know Zoe and Rob, like, many times, if they were talking to coaches, it wasn't in front of their team. Like, it's pull them aside, sit down, make it look like you're just having a chat. So that's also really important, what you say, but where you say it as well.
Yep. And those types of tournaments are a great opportunity to get reps in as a coach, because you have to coach a lot in a really short amount of time with people you probably don't know in an unfamiliar environment. So you kind of have to take it on face value for what it is right in front of you at that moment in time. And there were multiple times when we'd be around games and you'd see a timeout get called. Like, there's one I'm thinking of just off the top of my head, Nick, because we were both sitting there at the same time. And I won't name the coach because that's not fair.
I know where you're going.
Yeah. So a foul happened right before halftime. Coach, immediate reaction, timeout, we want to try and draw something up. No worries. Like, really good. Like, Nick and I both looked at each other and it's like, okay. Then we both looked at the scoreboard and it's like, this is bonus. You can draw up whatever you want, but you're shooting free throws. So whatever's coming here is not going to work. That's a great opportunity to make that mistake in that environment.
Yeah.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? Now, to the coach's credit, pivoted really quickly from here's our sideline play to try and score to actually we're shooting free throws, realized that they'd screwed up and changed it to, okay, this is now a defensive message. Great. Like, and again, nothing bad has come from that.
And we've all done that as coaches at least once, right? Like, so for me, I was right behind him on it. Yep. So I didn't want to stop him, obviously, during the timeout. But when it finished, he realized what's happened. And I'm like, you're good. Move on. Because you just got to move on, right? Like, we're going to make mistakes.
Exactly right.
I think he won the game anyway.
He did. Yeah. No, still coached it really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's when we talk about giving feedback, I know that's not what this pod's about, but I think it's important to ask questions. So, for example, I watched a game where at Nationals where a timeout was called on the other team's ball. Personally, I hate that, right? Like, I'm not for it at all. I know some coaches, and that's fine, that's their prerogative, but I don't like it. But I'm not going to walk up to that coach afterwards and be like, why did you call that timeout? It's explain to me your thought process on calling that timeout. And 9 times out of 10, they say, I'd actually called it earlier and they didn't cancel it. And I was like, okay, because that does happen. Happens a lot. Now we've avoided some really awkward and uncomfortable situations, and now that coach is still open to listening to my feedback because I haven't forced them to just completely shut down by attacking them for something that actually wasn't their fault. They tried to cancel it and they didn't cancel it.
Yeah, well, there are other times they simply, here's why. And they have a great reasoning behind it. It's like, okay, well, I don't agree with it, but no worries. As long as you've come up with something as to why you were doing it, we're all good. It's the ones where you say, oh, I just felt like we needed one. It's like, oh, you Might need some more info around that and like expand on that one a little bit.
But again, that's a whole learning process for everybody, not just the players. And you made a perfect point before, like we coaches get to a point and we just stop with them because we're like, oh, no, they're okay. And ultimately we need them to continue to grow so our athletes can as well.
Yep. Excellent.
You know you make me want to have my cold chairs, have my cold chairs. Come on now.
Oh, the look of disgust on Zoe's face has remained.
Seriously, we need to get one of those like things for you both to sit underneath of, and you can be like whack-a-moles the way you bob up and down to that.
It's catchy.
It's catchy music. Yeah. If that was, I don't really know how TikTok works, but I imagine that people would use that on their TikTok videos. Anyway, the coach shout-out this week is Jen Cusack. So we'd like to recognise Coach Jen Cusack, who is an assistant coach at Southern Cross Challenge. Jenna came on board at the last second on the Thursday at the start of the tournament, but straight away was able to fit into her role really well and made the athletes feel comfortable and helped to improve them. She added value to the coaching through great suggestions and use of timeouts, rotations, and areas to focus on during breaks in play, and was a big part of why the girls had a great experience during the tournament, which is a great one. Now, Jenna's literally just turned, what, 18? Mm-hmm. I think this was like her first big drive to Melbourne almost, was coming into the tournament after getting her license, and did a phenomenal job. This is someone that had started at under 12 Jamboree 3 years ago, I want to say off the top of my head, up in Echuca. Jumped in, was great there, was identified, hey, we can put some more work into her. Has continued to turn up for anything and everything and really wants to get involved with her coaching. So it's brilliant that someone else has recognised that, and it's not just us that's thrown that together. It is really nice to sort of hear. So if you do have any coach shout-outs, by all means, do send them in. Whether you want to send an audio format and it can be played right after that fantastic jingle that comes in first, or if you can just write some notes in, that's fine. You can just send them through. You can throw it on the Talking Split socials, or you can just email me, rob.calder@basketballvictoria.com.au, and I'll put that together as we jump back into this. As we get into the actual topic of this podcast, only 22 minutes, and this is actually pretty good.
We're going to do
this
it.
This is what happens.
It's happening.
I don't know. This is pretty good. Like, this is far more efficient than normal. Coach wellbeing is what we're going to talk about. Now, to be honest, we are going to do a whole month worth of coach wellbeing. We haven't decided which month that's going to be yet, but that is coming in the future. Like, some
when we planning. Get some time.
Yeah, no, right.
Moving parts. Moving
yeah,
parts.
It's. We want to do this properly. Now, to be fair, we spoke about it before. When coaches get to a certain level, we kind of leave them alone and say, hey, this is your journey now. The podcast is not designed for that. The podcast is designed for anyone in any capacity that wants to be involved with that. And to be fair, the amount of people that came up to us during the tournament, it's like, hey, we listen to the podcast. It's like, you don't coach? And they're like, yeah, but we just listen to the podcast. Like, it's just interesting to listen to. And it's like, okay, it's kind of cool that other people are listening to this as well. This one is focused on coaches, though. So for a whole month, we're going to try and put together a whole bunch of content around sleep, nutrition, wellness, mindfulness, all that sort of stuff over the course of a week. So there'll be four pods in a row that we try and really focus in on coaches and making sure they're all good in their spaces as well. So once we work out which month that will be, we'll let you know. But if there are also other topics or people you want to hear from on this, let us know and we'll try and chase them down as much as we possibly can, because it is a really important part of what we do as coaches. We spend a lot of time dealing with players, but we kind of forget about ourselves. And that's not to say that there aren't selfish coaches out there, because of course there are. There are selfish people in the world. That's going to happen continually. But, you know, we spend so much time worrying about players, we don't necessarily worry about ourselves as coaches. And honestly, there have been so many coaches with health issues over the past, you know, however long, like you can date this back to as long as possible, that we can't really afford to lose them as people, let alone as coaches, or coaches, let alone as people. Take it whichever way you want to go with that. We don't want to lose those people. So we do have to be super mindful as to some of the areas that, you know, what coach wellbeing looks like, I suppose, in this one. And the one that, or the two that I probably go to straight off the bat, we'll work through these that I've got down. Sleep is the biggest one. Now, sleep is not the easiest thing to get, especially when you've got a newborn, as it turns out. And you're getting sleep, but just in different formats.
Finish a lot of Xbox games, though, I'll tell you
that. Every now and again, you hear the crying. It's like, yeah, but I'm just about to beat the level. Yeah. Just hold
tight.
I can't
pause it, Sarah. Yeah.
Add that to your list.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Maybe I should add to the list, don't announce list on podcast.
But if Sarah could leave a rating and review, that would be fantastic. remember, you're reviewing all of us and not just Nick. So sleep is a big area. Now, basketball is one of those weird sports where it runs from pretty much 5 a.m. to about 11 p.m. It sort of feels like at times. And in various shapes and sizes, depending on the level you play at, where you play, different states will have different rules around it. Different countries have different parameters around this as well. It is a constantly evolving thing. But sleep for coaches is vital. Without it, everything just goes downhill. Your ability to function, your ability to make decisions under pressure, your mood, everything. I find sleep is the biggest one, and that's the one that I think suffered for me the most when I was working through as a coach. Thankfully, I've changed a little bit now. I used to live on like Red Bulls and stuff like that. Like the amount of times, and look, unless they want to sponsor the pod, not a big fan of Red Bulls as it turns out, but it was one of those things where there were times you'd finish your training session at 9:30, 10 o'clock. By the time you get home, it's like 10:30, quarter to 11. You maybe haven't eaten in that time either, so you grab something quick, but that keeps you up a little bit longer at the other end of the night. You're not getting to sleep until sort of midnight later by the time you wind down, but then you've got to be up at 5 a.m. for a session the next morning with kids. The most stressful time in my life is when I'm responsible for opening the gym. Like it is, if I have the keys, that worries the heck out of me. That I'm going to sleep through an alarm and there's going to be 20-something kids waiting at the door saying, hey, we've turned up for this and Rob hasn't. Like, that worried me. And consequently, my sleep suffered because of that. I just couldn't get to sleep. So the amount of times I'd be rolling into a training session the next morning on fumes, that would impact on how good the session was. You finish the session, then you're off to work for the day. You work through, and then it's almost like rinse and repeat as you go through this. And it's just, the hours are crazy that we do as coaches. I hadn't really found a great way to get more sleep other than stop drinking caffeine drinks. Like I'm not a soft drink person, but you know, I do notice the difference, I suppose, by not having them. But every now and again, you get to the end of a week and it's like, you know what, I probably just need a Coke to get through this and go from there. But it is a complex one. Like, sleep has been paramount for coaches for a long time, but it's probably the first thing to suffer when you coach as well. How have you gone about managing that for both of you? I'll start with you, Zoe.
Not well. I'm like you. If I have something early in the morning in particular, because I don't really have a body clock. Like, you know how some people will just wake up at 6:30 in the morning every day, regardless? Like, Rob's one of those. I'm not. If you leave me to sleep, I will sleep late. Like, so I need an alarm every day to wake me up. I don't know why. Maybe there's, if somebody knows why, let me know.
We'll get that sorted for you in Coach Wellbeing Month.
There we
it's
go.
It's coming up, TBA.
But I've always been like
You'll
that.
You'll be on
though.
That.
Yeah. It's not like that's been since I've started coaching. That's just, it's forever been the way. So then I get anxious, not saying I have anxiety, I just get anxious that I'm going to sleep through that alarm and miss what I'm supposed to be at. Thankfully, I'm in this role never responsible for opening the gym, but I am responsible for running the session, so I need to be there. So I always sleep horribly and my sessions are then bad, or things that shouldn't annoy me start to annoy me because I'm tired and all those sort of things. I've got to drive a long way home, all those sort of – and by the time I get home, I'm annoyed by how that one poor sleep has ruined that session or that day, that camp.
I can tell you what else annoys her. When you leave your alarms on your phone.
Oh, my God. One alarm. You, how many alarms do you set? Like, if you need one. To get up at 7, how many do you set?
Just the one.
Right. Can you take note, please?
You set a few.
I've got to be honest. I don't know after this podcast what I want to be using Nick's notes for anything.
Yeah. 7:05, 7:10, 7:15. Sure. Gets wow. up, nah. turns off the 7 when that goes off, and then goes out the room. And
sometimes
leaves
the
phone there,
the other ones off. Yeah.
Which continues anyway.
I've
that's
done the snooze
story.
By accident and gone in the shower and it's gone off.
Yeah, no.
Oh, no, I've done that too.
Sarah, can you turn that off?
But anyway, I digress. So, yeah, I haven't done a great job of looking after sleep, especially in high traffic times, like January. So even just recently, I was camp into cup into SCC, and I was driving at about 5:15 in the morning to go straight to the airport to go to AusCamp, and I fell asleep while I was driving, drifted onto the other side of the road. Thankfully, there was a big pit of gravel. I don't know what to call it, which when I hit that, it made a really loud bang noise and woke me up. And, of course, the smart thing to do when you wake up driving a vehicle is to grab the wheel and turn it, because that's when you're in your best peace of mind. Yeah. But thankfully no one was coming the other way, and I was already driving relatively slow because it was peak kangaroo time out in our area. So everything ended up all right. But that was a massive wake-up call for me. Punny.
Well, if that isn't going to be one, I don't know what exactly. It is.
For a couple of reasons. So when I actually went back and thought about it, I'd done 9 14-hour-plus days in a row, eating horrific food, definitely not drinking enough water, living on caffeine to get me through because I was so desperate to do a good job. And I don't regret that. I don't part of the schedule. It's part of my job, and it's something I love. But what I should have been better at is saying no when it was all running one into the other and there was no day off, at least one day off in between, was saying no to the camp in Canberra. Instead of, no, I've got to do everything. Like, I've got to – and I think it was playing on my mind too that had I made it to that camp, I would have come home, had one day off, and then been at Nationals after that, which is what the guys did, and I don't know how they did it. So impressive from them, I guess. But I think that was playing on my mind too, that it was going to end up being something like 20 out of 21 days in a row. Again, it's something we love, but sometimes when something's a passion and you love doing it, we almost forget that it's still work and we need to disconnect from things. And even things like during SCC, we were miking up the coaches and we'd go home, and instead of just sitting down and relaxing, I was watching the films with you and, you know, sort of we were talking about it. And what I should have been doing is switching off. So because I don't remember being – that, like, I was physically tired, but I don't remember being that physically tired. I was just mentally done. And I think that was my body's way of saying, righto, you're not going to stop. I'm going to stop you. Which thankfully nothing worse happened. But yeah, so that's been a real eye opener for me to make sure I prioritize. Prioritize is really important, and try and find other ways to maybe, you know, get up to camps and things if that's going to remain at that time, and take care of myself and like my body, the way I'm eating, the way I'm drinking, all that sort of stuff, because particularly with Cup the way it was game after game after game after game. And so there was just no time to even get out and get anything decent, because we were using external venues. There were places that didn't even have anywhere to eat. So it was literally like drive through on the way to the next game, and here we are. So those two things were really important, like two massive things that came out of that for me, and that, I love my job. I love what I get to do, but it's not worth my life.
Yeah. And it really is. Prioritizing a couple of things too. Like, you got to put some almost parameters in place or some roadblocks in place just to make sure, look, hey, Saturday I'm not coming, or I'm not coming until the afternoon, and just trying to find some time to disconnect from stuff, because it does happen all the time, and it impacts on every other area of your life. You just got to say no to some stuff, and that's all coaches. We all want to do everything for everyone and the best of our ability, but at some point you just sort of sit there and it's like, hey, actually, it's starting to impact everywhere else in my life as well. And, you know, we've all done the early morning starts. And do we want to do them? To be honest, sometimes yes. Like sometimes, like some of those early morning sessions were brilliant from, it got me out of bed early. It gave me a real sort of shot of adrenaline, it almost felt like, of, that was a really fun session. Like I'm looking forward to the rest of my day now because I'm in such a good mood coming from that one. There was the infamous Easter egg incident that put me in a fairly bad mood after one of our early morning sessions. Like,
I need to hear this.
So Rob had been coerced into doing SDP again after a numerous years out of the program, needed a coach, didn't really have any other options, and despite saying no three or four times, said yes on the fifth time. Good job, Ash. So went down. We'd been pretty good for the first block. Like they'd been fairly sharp. They turned up. They worked hard. They were an enjoyable group of kids to coach. And we got to that end of term where it's like Easter coming up. And it's like, look, you know, because I'm a nice person, I'll buy a whole bunch of Easter eggs for these kids. They can take one out. And, you know, it's a bit of a feel-good moment on the way through.
I just need to preface what a big deal this is because, it's, you know, when normal. You see teams and it's someone's birthday and someone brings the cupcakes and whatever, that drives him mental. He hates that.
Yeah. So the thought,
when he said, oh, I'm going to buy these eggs, I was like, great. Yeah, like huge. A bit of growth. Yeah.
Yeah.
With the cupcakes, you should just do what I do and just take a cupcake and go before they sing happy birthday.
Oh, the one that says their name is gone. Yeah. Like, how did this happen? So anyway, I roll in with the bag and all this sort of stuff, set up the camera because we filmed all the sessions, got all the session plans done, and the kids came in and trained atrociously. Like horrendously. So they didn't get the Easter eggs. They didn't know they were there. They stayed in the bag the entire time. It was going to be like a nice little surprise on the way out the door. I walk in the door that morning afterwards. And so he's like, how come there's like four cartons of Easter eggs here? Didn't deserve them. Like the terrible morning. The worst they've trained all term. They can get stuff. We're eating the eggs.
Thanks, kids.
So, you know,
the
sometimes,
one time.
Yeah, sometimes you get those mornings as well where things don't go quite so well at training sessions. But I genuinely enjoy the early morning training sessions because there's almost like, I have this real mental thing where it's like, you're getting in work while other people are not and they're sleeping. Like that straight away is like, yeah, you're doing work when others aren't. This puts you ahead of everyone else. Like even, like, and this is a little bit of a myth, I think, for a lot of it. Oh, but, you know, they turn up to practice all the time. It's like, yep, they do. Great, love them for it. Credit to everyone. But those other kids are doing extra. Like, and they're the ones that push ahead. So when you just turn up for everything, you stay at the same level. When you go and do extra, that's when you improve. There was a great, you know, it's early on into the first podcast where I'm going to reference Adam Grant straight away. But he had a tweet not too long ago where it's like a third of students at universities feel like they should get a B as a minimum just for turning up. And then their work outside of that should dictate whether they get like an A plus, an A or an A minus or a B plus. It's like, that's not how this works. Like, you have to go and do extra work to get this done. But that's a little bit of the sort of the society we live in too. So I love the early morning sessions personally. I hate the late night sessions. Like, they're the ones that really sort of drain. Like, if you said, hey, you can train 6 a.m. Sunday morning or you can train 6 p.m., give me the a.m. Like, I'll take that any day of the week. Like, I'm going to get probably the best out of them.
Yeah.
I like that personally. But, yeah, early mornings are not for everyone, but the late nights are the ones that killed me. Like, coaching VJBL games at 9:40 p.m. Like, you're not getting the best out of anyone at 9:40 p.m. at night. Like, coaches, players, referees, parents, like, been a long week. You're not getting the best out of anyone. What's their decision making look like at 10:45 at night? Probably not great. It's those types of things. So for mine, like, the sleep impacts, because I was always one of those people that if I coached a late game, I would be up even later on the other end of it. Like, it wasn't unusual to see 2:30, 3 a.m. after coaching games.
Can I just say on sleep, I've actually done a little bit, not a lot of research, but a little bit, and by no means am I a sleep specialist. I just want to be clear about that because it's just some things that I've tried.
Disclaimer at the start of this podcast. Like, any medical advice should not be taken
should not
as
be
gospel.
Taken. Yeah, correct. But as you know, Rob, I've last like 3 or 4 months, I've even had the Whoop device. Obviously, we're not sponsored. Hopefully, maybe one day. But not
great
at the
people.
But what it does, one of the features is it tracks quality of sleep. And I think for a lot of coaches, we can't just say, and I know I couldn't when I was a junior coach, hey, you got to get more sleep. Yep, cool. When?
Yep.
So focusing on the quality of sleep is what helped me. And I was doing little things. I'm not great with the coffee. I do drink the coffee late into the night, but I do try to stop eating at a certain time, like 8 o'clock, try to remove electronic devices out of the room. I even bought, and there's no scientific proof to it, so maybe it's a bit of a placebo, but it did work for me, blue light glasses or the cancelling. So I'd wear them an hour before I would go to sleep, and it would show a performance. So it tracks something called heart rate variability and stuff, which is the higher it is while you're sleeping, the better it is for you. I don't know how, but I'm just following what the app tells me. And yeah, I've improved because I can't get a 6-7 hour sleep, but if I get a really good 3 hour sleep, wake up and a really good 3 hour sleep again, it's not as good, but it's closer to it. So I think focusing on the quality definitely helps.
The other one I've heard about, just to go off the blue light glasses, is red light. Like from all accounts, I was listening to a Huberman podcast, I think it was, but he sort of said red light will put your brain into a position where you get better sleep out of it. Again, medical advice, take it or leave it, you know, not our world. But red lights is apparently just as good. If you can't go the blue lights, go the just like a red globe. Might be something to look at as well.
I think one of the things that's important if you're trying to really put a dent into this and take it seriously is understand what you need. So I need more sleep than Rob needs. Like, even at my healthiest, I need more sleep than Rob needs. So it's as simple as that. And I don't apologize for that either. So where people sort of make these comments of, oh, you know, like I have nothing on that day and I sleep till, say, 8 o'clock, and people make jokes about that. It's like, well, I could get up earlier, but then I'd be tired and have a really ordinary day, or I can sleep for another hour and have a great day.
Which is really working like, down your weekly sleep debt, right? Like, because you accumulate that over time, and you're probably just trying to make it back.
Yeah. He just heard 8 a.m. sleep in and he's envious.
It does not exist.
But it's important to know what you need. I've always needed a higher amount of hours of sleep. Again, I don't know why. I wish I didn't. I wish I was one of those people that could live off of like 4 hours and get so much more done in my time. But what do I want to be? Do I want to be asleep for a fraction longer but be far more efficient when I'm awake and happier when I'm awake?
I'll take happier, thanks.
And better to be around.
That too.
Two from two. Or try and conform to this, you know, you've got to be out of bed at 5 or else you're lazy and you're this and you're that, and be miserable. And frankly, when I've tried that, my health has suffered.
It's Dr. Ian Dunican, who was on a podcast way back, I'll say somewhere in the 30s, we managed to get him on, is a sleep health person. And his thing was, you know, the rise and grind mentality is dead. Like, and it should be dead. Like, the new one should be sleep in and win. And that was kind of his thing, is like, more sleep is better for you, especially like young kids. I don't know if this is about coaches, but young kids, obviously, they grow more when they sleep. Mm. Like, it's those types of things. As coaches, we do need a base level of sleep to be able to function. So, well,
yeah. One of the eye-openers for me was, we were recently in December, went on holidays. And it's the first time in a long time we've done a holiday in the one spot. So we actually had time to chill out and, you know, decompress. And it was this one comment that that Rob made that really hit home for me, which was, like, he just said, he goes, I've really enjoyed you on this holiday. And I was like, yeah. Because I've been sleeping, like, you know, so it's, and I'm not allowing work to stress me out, and I'm not, like, I was getting emails still and things like that, but I was only, if it was super urgent, I would deal with it. But otherwise it was like, no, you know, I've set really clear boundaries in that, on that holiday, and I think it made a difference. And can I be like that all the time? Of course not. I'm not saying that, you know, you'll be fully charged and, you know, stress-free and happy and that all the time. But the aim for me is to try and, you know, make that as often as possible. You know, I had an athlete kind of question, I guess, me and my job and what I've been doing, which would normally send me bouncing off the walls. Like, I would have been so upset. I would have been stressing out about it, all that sort of stuff. Now, I just took a deep breath. I went back and looked at the work that I've done, and there's the data. So if that's a perception there, then that's on them, is how I have to start thinking, because I can't keep taking on all of this stress, because it makes, one, it affects my health, and then two, it affects my relationships and the people around me.
Do you think it, because I think a lot of coaches can relate to this. I was going to ask you both a question. Let's say you've got a 9:40 game, because you've probably, I think you did a lot when you were younger, 9:40 game late at night. You're up at 8 o'clock coaching domestic. You're probably coaching a few more games in the afternoon because you're just trying to pick up reps. You've got Sunday morning training. How would you factor in all this, the importance of sleep, knowing what you know now, how vital it is?
I was, and this will tap into the next one, which is nutrition and diet. I am a very big, if I do something good, I need to be rewarded for it. Like, you know that whole delayed gratification? Doesn't exist in my world. I want instantaneous gratification.
If I go to the gym, I should be instantly 15 kilos lighter.
Exactly right. So if I coach a game on a Friday night.
The three of us are all in agreement here, so you should have someone who opposed this.
Yeah. On a Friday night, if I had a 9:40 game, the game was cool and all, like no problem with that. But the bit I enjoyed the most was catching up with other coaches after the 9:40 game for like a pizza or something like that, and just talking about, and it was almost like group therapy of, hey, let's talk about why you didn't enjoy tonight or what went well for you, or you get a little bit of X's and O's talking there as well. I loved that. But I look back on it now and it's like, well, whilst that was great development in a lot of ways, it really was counterintuitive to trying to get sleep at the other end. So when I was younger and coaching 9:40 games, not unusual to be up until 3 a.m. The last time I coached a whole bunch of 9:40 games, I would be out of that stadium and home as quick as I possibly could, rather than trying to burn the candle at both ends, because I am a big believer in you need coaching reps. Like, it's, you know, we've spoken about it before, you can't cheat the reps. Like, you got to do them to get better as a coach. And there were times where I would, like, I'd get to a Saturday domestic and I'd be coaching like 4 or 5 teams on a Saturday, because that's how I got better. Like, different age groups, different levels, I just had to do it. Like, I wasn't a naturally gifted basketballer. I'd had to be around that as long as I could to learn. Like, what buttons could I push? How did it make people tick and that sort of stuff? And, you know, I did stuff I shouldn't have done from I wasn't mentally prepared because I was usually lacking sleep. But that also impacted on my diet, because that was largely canteen food. Like, it's, you know, we all sort of joke about it. It's like I was on the phone to you the other morning, Nick. It's like, hold on a second. Hey, can I have like an extra large, long black? you know, it's that kind of thing. It's like, brother, it's like 7:30. Like, what is going on?
And
like,
in fairness to you, Diamond Valley used to, that I can't remember the guy in the canteen's name, but he used
Phil,
to make brilliant the
hot
best
dogs.
Hot dogs.
Phil had great
the
hot
best.
Dogs. They were legit.
Hard to miss.
Yeah. So good.
But because of that, like, my diet suffered. And what was really interesting is prior to sort of the COVID type era, I was obviously coaching a lot and all that sort of stuff. During COVID was actually really good for me because, one, antisocial person, got to disconnect from near on everyone, brilliant. But two, got into some really good habits with cooking more food, going and exercising, doing all that sort of stuff. So actually came out of that quite good. What was really interesting is I went back to coaching and all those habits broke down straight away. Like, it, like near on instantaneously. It's like, how ingrained was that habit in me prior to, when that was like 3 or 4 years earlier, that I'd finish a game at a 9:40 or 9:40 game, and it's like, yeah, cool, drive through. Like, and it's what you do, like, because that's what's open, that's what's convenient to you. Now, could I make the option of going like a grilled chicken salad wrap? Well, yeah, I could, but triple cheeseburgers are nice. So it was that type of thing where I did a really poor job of, like, it. So I've tried to be a lot better at that. Like, I've cut out the fast food stuff, except for Nando's. Like, Nando's is top tier level sort of stuff, yeah. Seeking sponsors.
Definitely.
But it's, you know, but it is wonderful people. But they, like, it's that kind of stuff. I've tried to cut those out now, and what I have noticed is that has directly impacted on my sleep. By eating better foods that are less processed, that are less, like, greasy, heavy, salty, that sort of stuff, my sleep has got better. Like, it's like I can fall asleep in, like, 3 minutes, like, when I go to bed. And, like, even then, 3 minutes, I may have been, like, pretty good by 2 minutes on that. Like, it can be quick. But my quality of sleep is significantly better. Like, I wake up in the morning and I feel refreshed now because I haven't had to get up every hour and a half to drink water because I'm so thirsty from what I've had the night before. So I think sleep was directly impacted by the diet, which hasn't been good and is improving, but it's still not perfect, but it's at least better than where it was because, you know, sometimes we eat foods out of convenience, not because we actually want them in the first place. And it's like, if I don't eat now at 9:45 p.m. I'm not going to eat until probably 2 p.m. tomorrow. And that's like, you can go into the data on fasting and all that sort of stuff, but that's not overly healthy either.
I think what you're talking about there, though, is what's really important for if you are trying to, you know, prioritize sleep and you've got, you know, say Friday night game, Saturday domestic, you know, Sunday is got to be a bit of a day of rest. Like, you've got to find a way. You might have your training in the morning, but now you've got to rest, or find a little allotment of time where you're going to say, okay, I'm not putting anything on in this. You know, it might be Monday nights, for example. And if a club says, hey, we want you to do this on a Monday night, no. Like, and because that's where you're catching up or getting yourself, you know, sort of as close to back to neutral as possible. The problem, I think, with coaches, and I know I was like this a lot, was you'd just keep running. Like, you just keep going and under the next one, under the next one, under the next one.
You don't want to let anyone down.
Yeah, and because coaches are givers by nature. So that's, you know, if there's a way to help an athlete.
Also, it's also, they don't want to miss out.
There's that too. You know? Absolutely. Yep,
for sure.
But they also, if there's a way to help an athlete or help another coach, well, yeah, no worries. And, you know, it sounds like a bit of a cliche, but they say, you know, you can't fill anyone else's cup if yours is empty. Like, there's got to be, I'm not saying say no to everything. Please don't take this the wrong way. But you've got to find allotments of time to make sure you're getting adequate sleep or to give yourself the best chance to get adequate sleep. Figure out what you're eating, how you're going to, you know, what you're going to do. And when I say allotments of time, that might also be, right, we're during school holidays. For the first week, no indies. Like, that's my time. But the second week, if anybody wants to do workouts, then we can get into that or something like that. Just, yeah, understanding, prioritizing you from a physical perspective is really important.
I think it's a really, really good point. I have had experiences where at Casey, we have a lot of coaches there. They'll just say yes to everything.
Mm.
And there was one particular coach, he was probably in his third early morning session with me, which is fine. Like, I do the same thing. However, he goes to another job and I could see on his face and I go, mate, you're exhausted. You're not coming in next week. And he goes, oh, thank you, man. And I'm like, why wouldn't you tell me? But that's going back to
they don't want to let you down.
They'll just, yeah. Right. It's like, you're not letting me down. It's okay. I can handle this for a week.
Yep.
But if you get sick, you're out for 4 weeks. That's a lot more difficult.
Mm.
Yep. And it really is, but we've all had other jobs that are not coaching.
Mm.
Like, and ultimately, they pay the bills. Mm. Like, it's that's kind of what it comes down to, but it's not unusual.
Printing.
Yeah, and the printing. So you have that job that sort of sits there, but you probably have, like, I think at one stage I had 4 coaching jobs outside of my actual job. And so consequently trying to service everyone and try and be the best version of what I could be to make other people the best version of what they could be, I couldn't. I genuinely couldn't. And look, to be fair, there was one I was trying to say no to that just financially, eventually I couldn't say no to. And it's like, well, okay, I'm going to have to do this. But to do that, I had to let go of one of the things I actually really enjoyed doing that didn't pay well or anything like that. But that was fine. Like, I really enjoyed it. I was doing that for free. But I really enjoyed it and had to let it go. I'm annoyed that I I kind of let it go in there as well. So it is difficult. Like, you do have to just prioritize. Not saying say no to everything by any stretch of the imagination, but just prioritize what you need. You know, when do you block out your time? What does it look like? Like, I know we had the chat earlier, and it's like, hey, you know, your son's going to be a baby once.
Mm-hmm.
So if you need to take a little bit more time, take a little bit more time. It's okay. There's got to be a balance in there because, and it was, you know, Julia Walsh that was speaking about it. It's like, we work the shadowy hours as coaches, like 5 to 9, as in 5 a.m. to 9 a.m., that's when we work as coaches. And 5 p.m. to 9 p.m., that's when we work as coaches. And you can probably even stretch that 9 p.m. out a little bit longer, to be honest. But, yeah, but in between, we also have other jobs. Mm. We have family. We have friends. We have social life. Like, all these other sorts of things to start to come into it as well. And it's like, how much are you sacrificing to be a better coach? And that's the difficulty because, I mean, coach progression, I mean, it's a thing that plays on a lot of people's minds. And there are so many young coaches that are in a hurry to get there. And it's like, hey, just take a beat. Like, enjoy where you're at the moment. There's less pressure where you're at the moment as you go up the chain. You know, people expect certain things of you. Enjoy it now. And it is that whole, what was it? It's like, slow success will build character, whereas like fast success builds ego. Mm-hmm. So as a coach, take your time getting there. Do things the right way. And if that means it takes you an extra 2 years, but you're in a healthier space mentally and physically when you get there, well, you're going to do a better job and you're not going to be just like in out. Because that can happen as well. So you have to be really careful that you're not like overdoing things. You don't want to cost yourself opportunities, but you don't want to overdo it as well. Because, you know, it's not hard to walk into a training session and say, hey, that guy's tired. But that's probably going to impact on their performance as a coach, which means do they get a bit of a reputation? Oh, that coach is a bit lazy. It's like, no, you just walked in at the wrong time. Like, they've been on court for 4 weeks straight doing this.
Working a full-time job and doing
things. Yeah, like, what are you expecting?
And that's what's great about you recognizing that and telling him not to come, because what can tend to happen is we ignore that and then we're going to wait for a tragedy before we actually make an adjustment, you know, and I was nearly one of them, so I can definitely talk to that. But how – question for both of you, because you both would have had this and I definitely had this – you've coached your game on a Friday night. It was horrible. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong. You're angry. You're stressed. Parents are losing their mind. You go home and you're trying to sleep. You can't because you're so angry and you're so stressed. What do you do?
Well, this is a familiar thought. It happens a lot. Like most coaches would go through.
Every time
this.
We drive past the, is it the Hungry Jack's on Geelong, near Geelong?
Yep.
Yeah. Every time we drive past it, was there till like 2 a.m. after one of our games. Like, what?
It's exactly what you go through, though. Yeah. I'm probably better at it now than I was. Not game coaching probably impacts on that a fair bit. Like, I'm in a better space because of it. Like, I am an all-in or all-out person. I can't half do things. Like, if I say I'm going to coach, I'm coaching. But I'm putting everything into that thing to make sure it's as good an experience as possible. Not just for me, but for the people that are around me. And consequently, I forget about some things along the way or make some certain decisions that probably you don't sit there in hindsight and think, good idea. So for mine, that whole lack of sleep thing and how you wind down at the end of it, the process I started putting in place was I needed to get all the thoughts in my head out of my head. That was the biggest thing. Like, I know there are plenty of coaches that sit there and like, there was a coach at the end of last year that sent me like a picture message of like a drink that they were having of the alcoholic variety, and it was like 2:30 a.m. when it came through. It's like, mate, this is not helping you. Like, this is the worst thing you could be doing to potentially...
Funny, but not healthy.
I appreciate it because we've all been there, but it was one of those sorts of things. So for mine, I found a lot of value in just getting everything out. Like, we've spoken before about the post-game evaluation sheet that I used to fill out just to get it all out. And it's like, as I can sit there in the car before I leave or when I get home, punch everything in, it all sits in a little database for me that I can go back to if I need to. But that got all the thoughts in my head out. Where I struggled was letting go of stuff. Like, if I had a run-in with either a referee, a parent, a player, whatever the case might be, I really struggle with injustices and just in there, but it was clearly a travel. And then they called 3 seconds on us. It's like, Rob, this really doesn't matter. Like, it's stop getting so hung up on this thing. But I found by getting it all out, I was in a better spot because of it. And look, you know, we've all had that thing too. Like, it was a bit of an ongoing joke for a while there that any time from like 10:45 onwards, you'd take a phone call from another coach that had coached that night as well, because it's like, whatever I'm going through, they're probably going through too. There might be some shared comfort in this that I get to hear about their problems, but don't make mine feel quite so bad. But for my, I had to get it out. Well, that was the biggest thing for me.
Yeah, 100% agree. I'm very much similar. I actually have a story about this. Story time. I may have two. We'll see how we go.
Okay.
But so first one, my brother calls me at like 11 o'clock at night, and obviously I don't coach at Friday nights anymore. And he just starts talking to me about the game. He's done this a few times, and I'm like, George, I don't coach juniors anymore, mate. Like, why are you calling me? And he goes, and it was a really good point. He goes, Nick, you got to understand, I've got two kids that both play basketball. So when I get home, I have to deal with my daughter's emotions. I have to deal with my son's emotions. I sometimes have to deal with Rebecca upset about whatever's happened on the night, and I haven't been able to get out my thoughts of the game, and I just need to speak to someone. I don't even need advice. And I go, hey, all good. I get it.
Yep.
You know, and I think that's a really good point. Like, yeah, you need trusted people that you can call in the car on the way home, yep, and just get it out. Like, you don't have to be nasty or anything like that. You just got to go, why would they do that? Why would they call? And just air it. You're probably not going to do anything about it. You just need to get it out.
Yeah. And in that time, you're probably not looking for solutions either.
Yeah.
Like, you're not coming to someone, how do I fix this problem? All you are literally trying to do is just unload it.
Mm-hmm.
So that once it's done, then you're in a better headspace to find a solution if you need to.
Mm. Second funny story.
Wearing that button out.
I was coaching many years ago, a little bit younger, and one of the parents came up to me after the game and just goes, you know, how do you deal with all this, Nick? There's so much pressure in the games. And I jokingly just said, well, I bottle it all up and then I sit in the car and cry myself to Enya.
Which is, I will go on record, 148 episodes, we have never referenced Enya on this podcast.
Yes. First time for everything. Happy New Year, everyone. Anyway, at the end of the season, she remembered. So what she did was she went and got a vinyl record of Enya, got the kids to sign it, and put it in a glass case, and it says break glass in case of emergency.
Oh, brilliant. That's awesome.
And it's still on my mantelpiece at home today.
That is good. I really enjoy that. But that is, it's a big part of it. It's, you do have to find a way to just level yourself back out again.
Mm.
And it's not the easiest thing to do. Like, I know we've coached together a lot, so we sort of had some loose rules around, hey, talk about it in the car ride, but don't talk about it at home. But then we'd be sitting on the couch, it'd go quiet for like 7 minutes, and it's like, I know one of the two of us is thinking about this. So, like, so we probably have to talk about this now. Like, it's hard. Mm. Like, you know, I'm not sitting here saying we have all the answers on it, and that's why we're going to try and do a little bit more research and try and come back to everyone with some best practices to work all this sort of stuff out. But, you know, I think sleep is front of mind. Nutrition needs to be front of mind as to what it can look like for a lot of coaches. Your mood and your mental health obviously impacts down the line somewhere as well. Dealing with confrontation, being able to just let things go. Like, that's not an easy thing for a lot of people. Like, I do a lot of my thinking, like we talked about it before. Like, I am an up early person. Like, you are more likely to get a reply on text from me at 5:30 a.m. than you are at 5:30 p.m. Like, it's just, I'm up, I'm doing stuff. I can function a little bit better when the rest of the world is
going. Meanwhile, his alarm's still going off at home.
Yeah, you won't get a reply on message, but, you know.
But the seventh alarm will be still ringing.
Exactly. You
know. And his phone will be outside through a window.
I've tried to be a little nicer about the alarm tone that I use now. It's a little bit softer.
Oh, it's more subtle.
Yeah, it's a little bit less jarring.
It does not work.
But, like, I like it when the rest of the world is quiet so I can function a little bit better in that. So I know that my time before Zoe's up, before the rest of the world is going, is kind of like that 5:30 a.m. through to about 8 a.m. That's when I'm probably my most productive through the day. So for me, I find it a lot easier to work through a lot of things there when there's no other noise going on around. Like, if I want to listen to a podcast when I go for a walk in the morning, I can. If I want to just listen to like death metal or something like that to try and get it all out, well, I probably could. There's those sorts of things. So I've got some things in place now where it's like, well, okay, I'm going to try and do all my thinking. Being a naturally sort of anxious person in general, one problem is not normally one problem for me, because I try and not catastrophize things, but I do try and find out, well, okay, if this one problem, here's how I'm going to solve this one problem. But if that doesn't work, here's where it could go wrong. So now I need to try and solve that branch of the problem. But then there are three things that might vary in that. So now I need three more solutions. So one problem for me ends up being like 30 different problems, 29 of which don't even eventuate. But I've put mental space into that in the first place. So it's trying to work out, you know, what's actually real and what's my head telling me is real that isn't real. And I think, I mean, as coaches, we go through that. Geez, what if they advance the ball here? What do I have to do? Like, if they keep in the backcourt, will that change what I say at this time? Like, we go through that all the time. So in a lot of ways, it's kind of healthier for me to think that way, but it is taxing by the same token, quite mentally. And then just finding balance with family time and personal life. Like, the last thing you want to be is a little bit of a zombie at a family event because, you know, you're still thinking about a game 3 days earlier that you can't let go, and consequently you're not giving the best version of yourself to the people that are around you or in front of you, and, you know, that impacts. But being able to disconnect, like, that's a really big thing. Like, I'm sure every phone has that do not disturb function. Like, I'd recommend using that thing. Like, it's just turn off the notifications for a little while. Like, delete the social media apps on your phone, or keep them, but subscribe to the Talking Split channels, obviously. But, you know, it's, you know, take the apps off, like, for a little while there. And it was actually around the Smack Talk event last year, where it was like, go dark on social media for a day. Like, don't check anything. That I realized that picking up my phone to check social media was actually a habit. Like, I didn't actually care what was on there, but I was just so used to picking up my phone, looking at it, hitting one of the apps, that became a habit. And by moving that app to the second page on my phone became a little bit more inconvenient. So it's like, actually, I don't need to do this, or I don't care about this anymore. Deleting the app off your phone altogether and like logging in through the web browser, that might be a better way to disconnect, I think, from those things. But you do need time. And I think as coaches, because we give so much of our time to our players and we want to try and give them the best experience possible, we almost need to be a little bit more selfish ourselves, because, and look, this is not meant as a slight, players are selfish. Like, players are in it for what they can get out of the sport. Like, where can it take them? What can they do with it? Whether it's a career, whether it's a pastime, whether they just want to be really good. There is not a player alive that is not a selfish player in some capacity. Parents are selfish. Like, they want to see their child succeed. And I understand that too. Like, that, it's not a bad thing, but they want success for their child. But because of that, they put their thoughts and their feelings and their emotions above that of the team in a lot of cases. Referees are selfish because ultimately they want to turn up, do a good job with the least amount of confrontation possible and get paid and leave. And I understand that too. Like, why wouldn't you want that as part of what the world you live in? As coaches, we're trying to fix all of those problems. Like, we're trying to have a good relationship with the referees in the hope that 50-50 out of bounds might go in our direction. We're trying to have a good relationship with parents because if that's a better relationship, then the car ride home becomes a lot easier, but that makes the kid better. And if the kid's better, well, then I have less problems to deal with as a coach. So we spend all this time trying to fix and make better people around us that we forget about the one that's supposed to be doing that in the first place, and that is the coach. So that's where Coach Wellbeing Month will come from. Again, we've got 10-ish months left of this year. It'll be in one of those 10. We'll try and give you a bit of a lead up. Like, we're not going to try and ask you to do like a 75 hard or anything like that. Like, that's probably a little bit of a bridge too far. Like, we should have really done it in February. Like, call it 28 easy or something like that. Would have been a little bit better. Damn, way to do it. Good. That's pretty good, isn't it? Giving it all their great content ideas here. But, you know, it might be something around that where, look, you know, as a group, do we have like some little leaderboards where we can log, like, you know, if you go for a walk, log it, and have a little bit of a coach community around that, where I think everything is a little bit easier if you have other people around you doing the same thing. Mm. You know, you are a bit of a byproduct of the four or five people you spend the most amount of time with. So maybe we try and build that out a little bit as a bit of a coach fraternity almost, as to like, hey, look, during the month of, geez, June might be a little bit rough. They're probably a little bit cold for people to go for a walk outside and rainy. But, you know, maybe we look to the back end of the year when the weather starts getting a little bit nicer or something like that with, okay, let's see if we can try and make a little bit of movement, like whether we do like a little bit of a blood drive. Like, I know at BV we have the lifeblood team here where, you know, staff go and donate blood and those sorts of things. Maybe that's something we look at doing down the road somewhere.
I think just to – I know we're probably leaning towards wrapping up, but – one of the things I think also that's really helped me shift my mindset. Am I perfect with it? Absolutely not, but I'm getting better, is perspective. And so, like, when you just said then about, like, lifeblood, like, touch wood, I haven't needed somebody to donate blood so I can survive. And, you know, that's pretty lucky. Like, I've got some really cool people and things going on in my life that why let an incident or, you know, something, a game or a, you know, a result or something like that drag all of that down. Take what I need out of it and then move on. Like I said, not perfect at it, but getting better. Just using that perspective of, yeah, things are not really as bad as they seem when you're right in that moment, because you feel like the whole world is is crumbling because, you know, that one loss by one point. Like, actually, I've got a bit of a story time. Last one, I promise. Rob's last season of coaching.
It's never good.
It looked like he knew where you were going with this.
I had
this
a little bit of a feeling, like when she's eyeballed me, she's like, I've got a bit of a story. It's like, this is going to be about me.
Of coaching under 18 girls. And it had been a rough one. They lost by a point on the buzzer. And he's driving home and I'm on the phone doing the, you know, just letting the vent happen. So hopefully by the time he gets home, he can be a human again. And he gets pulled into a breatho, like a mobile booze bus. And he's like, hang on a second. So he is seething. He leaves me on the phone so I can hear it. He pulls up and the copper was the greatest human of all time.
He was, to be fair. Like, g'day, an absolute
mate. And he's like, oh, what have you been up to tonight? And he's like, oh, I just coached again. How'd you go? Lost by a point. Oh, no. And I can hear all this through the phone. And I can very quickly hear Rob starting to shift from this all sucks, I hate everyone and everything, into...
which is my default setting, for anyone curious.
Most coaches, right? Like.
To, that was pretty funny, things aren't that bad. And it wasn't that we stopped talking about it after he drove out of that booze bus, but the vibe was different. And he was different also for the rest of that that weekend compared to other weekends. So it was just really cool to see how one person could affect somebody who was in that sort of state of mind. It was really cool and out of nowhere.
Yeah, it's probably something so bizarre for you that it's just switched you off.
Oh, absolutely.
Out of the moment, yeah, right?
Completely disconnected me. And there was part of me that still wanted to be angry afterwards, but I couldn't.
Yeah, because like, you're already in that.
Yeah. Like I was mid-rant. Yeah. I'm like, oh, and now I see, I can guarantee I'm getting pulled into this. Yeah, of course we are. Like, this is how this works out. You know, of course, we couldn't get the call when we needed the call. We couldn't close out the shooter. All of us.
And now I'm in a booth. Yeah.
And I think Zoe's like, that guy seemed like pretty fun. Yeah, he was. Like, it's, you know, it was almost like, I don't want to shift out of this, but I have to shift out of this. But it was a good moment. As coaches, we go through that too, because now how many times do you finish a game and it's like, hey, there's maybe a couple of people I don't want to see straight after a game, whether it be parents or players, and it's like, I don't need to deal with that because that's going to cause me some more stress and anxiety. And a couple of parents spring to mind straight away that I've had years ago. But it's like, that is the last person I need to talk to after a game, like, because they have such a weird take on things that I don't need this. But trying to have some people around you, I think, can make a really big difference. And like we toured with the idea of a drive time show, like after on a Friday night where people can call in and talk to us. On Talking Split, but it's just dangerous.
Can I be the one who takes the calls?
Just the screening process is going to have
BDO's got to absorb the initial conversation.
We don't have a
7 second delay button. Yeah, no good, unfortunately. So, but I can recommend, like, get a circle. Like, find some people that you're happy to talk to. Make it someone outside of your comfort zone. Make it someone away from basketball who you can talk to as well that just loves sport or, you know, is successful in some other area of their life that they can have a little bit of a chat to you about and just sort of talk you down a little bit, I suppose, at times is a big part of it. All right, into our social sighting of the week.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
This is from Rob Rotella, who is a golf coach.
It's funny, I spend so much of my time teaching people to have fun because I think in all of sport, you play a lot better when you're having fun and you're enjoying it. But from a psychological standpoint, when you're having fun, not only do your muscles relax, but your mind gets quiet. So I'm always telling players, you know, you have a choice every time you go to the golf course or get near the short game, is you can either suddenly feel like a really talented athlete or you can turn yourself into a serious uptight nerd. And I'm always telling players that when you're having fun, you're much more likely to feel like a talented athlete. And when you start getting serious, you're more likely to turn into a serious nerd. And when I say serious nerd, I mean someone who tries to play consciously. When I say consciously, I'm talking about people who suddenly start overthinking everything or trying to do it correctly or thinking about their how to make the motion instead of letting it happen. The reason we want to have fun is so that the mind gets quiet and you can go unconscious because we all play better. Like you hear so many people talk about rhythm and flow. It's impossible to have rhythm and flow if you're doing it consciously. So you're going to get a lot more rhythm and flow and a lot of touch and feel if you're unconscious.
Yeah, I forgot to take that part. Yeah, but yeah, interesting. First episode.
Lucky
back.
That's all it was.
Yeah, first episode back. It's but what is really interesting, and that I think applies to coaches and players. Like as a coach, are we actually having fun and are we enjoying this? Where we can make decisions as we need to as we go through it, or are we so stressing about the result that we have forgotten all the process that comes before that? Are we forgetting about the human that is standing in front of us that is just looking to get better and get coaching? You know, are we taking into account everything else going on? So, whilst a different sport, I think the mantra remains the same. How many players do you see tighten up at the free throw line? Because all they are thinking about is my coach told me I need to have this foot here and I have to have this lined up with this and I have to put my hand on the basketball here and then this has to happen and then why has that person walked in over there? Who's that? Where's mum and dad over sitting on the sides? What's the scoreboard look like at this point? Of course, they're a quivering mess. We're on the foul line. If you're one of those coaches that sits there and says, we all need to make 4 free throws each before we leave this training session and you can't make 4 free throws each, of course, you're going to tense up on the foul line a little bit. Like, there's those types of things. Now, I'm not saying don't value free throws. We've all lost a game by a handful and we've gone straight to the box score and seen, oh, good. You know,
and we're losing more and more.
2 of 18 because of what happens. It's that sort of stuff. Like, you've got to be loose with how you have it. Just find your natural flow, I think, as a coach. Don't try and be someone else. Don't try and, you know, copy mannerisms or anything like that. Like, we can talk Southeast Phoenix, the difference in body language and personality from Mike Kelly to Josh King. Vast. Mm-hmm. But if either one of them tried to coach like the other one, they'd both be unsuccessful. Mm-hmm. It's just how it rolls. So I think part of it is find what's fun for you. And find what's fun for your players and lean into that as best you possibly can. So that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Thank you both.
Thank you.
It's been
Thank
good
you.
To be back, everyone. Do not forget you can like, share, subscribe, all the cool stuff. Leave comments. Coach Wellbeing Month. We will get you a date on that in the next little bit.
We stayed on topic, so.
Yeah. You got through it. Yeah.
A little bit.
High fives for everyone. Coaches, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch everyone again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.